CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 158, with Dr. Rebecca Metzinger, the challenges of teaching residents at large public and VA hospitals.
Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I've got a very special guest. I met this ophthalmologist when I was in New Orleans at the New Orleans Academy, and I was just enthralled by her amazing stories of teaching residents at a big teaching hospital and all the crazy stories that come with that. So this is Dr. Rebecca Metzinger from New Orleans. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I am such a huge fan of your podcast and all of your amazing videos. And just the fact that you live stream and talk about these complicated issues. I just thank you. It's such an honor and a privilege to be here.
First, yes, my pleasure to speak to you. First, I looked you up a little bit. You would have been my parents' dream. So when I was in high school, I applied for those combined bachelor MD programs.
Okay.
And I got rejected from all of them.
Oh.
But you were one of the very rare, like less than 1% of applicants who got into the University of Michigan combined bachelor MD program. That's amazing.
I know. Who would have ever figured that? Because some of my classmates are like Doug Ree, who's a chairman somewhere,
right,
of some big important program. And one of the guys that ended up in my class is Sanjay Gupta, who is the neurosurgeon. He started off a year ahead, but he did a fellowship at the White House with Hillary Clinton that started his career. But you know, obviously, he's a neurosurgeon. He's reporting for CNN or whomever, and he stops like on some war front in the Middle East to like do a neurosurgical emergency case.
Like, yeah, but you know what? I like you better. You know why? You can do something that's truly a modern miracle. You can make a blind man see.
You're right. And that's what drew me. I didn't start in ophthalmology. I started in general surgery, but you're right. That is the thing that drew me and made me ultimately fall in love with ophthalmology, is just giving people back their vision. It's just such an amazing thing.
Yeah, like you, I am just thankful every day that I'm an ophthalmologist. Yes. This is like the most magical profession ever. I just can't imagine that I'm this lucky.
And think about this too. You look into people's eyes and you tell so much about them. It really is true. I'm always like, did you get your cholesterol checked like we talked about last time? Your blood pressure, this or that? I mean, I have had a chiropractor tell me there's some science to iridology that I should be able to read the crypts and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll put a pin in that conversation. I'm not sure I believe it.
No, we're truly blessed with ophthalmology. Now, you work with the residents.
Yes.
In New Orleans, and you are at like basically a teaching hospital where you see like the ultra difficult cases. You don't do cataract surgery. You do New Orleans rocks.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's just a little bit of everything. I mean, you never know. Is there going to be a bug in this eye? Is there going to be a piece of something, some sort of foreign body? Is it going to be just these white diamond-like cataracts?
Right.
And, you know, some people have to go to third world countries to get that kind of experience. I'm like, come on down to Louisiana.
Right.
We'll do a thing or two.
I tell you, you know, some people think, oh, no, you got to do some mission trip to a third world country. I promise you can find the equivalent cases here in the USA.
Absolutely. And I feel like if we spent a little bit more time on our own citizens, you know, our fellow man, you know, some of our neighborhoods and communities, maybe it would really, we would do so much more for some of our, you know, communities and, you know, help people and give back to society.
I'm with you 100%. Listen, I'm American first. So I want to do the most good here in the USA. And
yes,
then certainly I want to do good all over the world, but it can start in your own backyard.
Exactly. And it doesn't, I'm not trying to say citizen or not citizen. There are so many people that we encounter in a day, undocumented, documented, you know, unhoused, housed, all echelons of life. And that's the crazy thing about those big inner city hospitals, is you never know who will come through the door. Some massive car accident to whatever. I was actually chosen to be the alumnus of the year for Tulane for this coming year. And
Awesome.
I'm trying to think of a topic to speak about. And one of my predecessors was Carl Stonecipher.
Sure, good girl,
And
great guy.
he gave an amazing talk that it was like the top 10 reasons why, it was the best to train at Charity Hospital. And it was all like the knife that went through the skull that penetrated into the orbit. And so I sent you that picture,
Right, crazy. I mean, Charity Hospital in New Orleans is a very storied place because it really had basically the most extreme type of cases you'd ever see on the planet. And it was right here in the US, right there in New Orleans. And it made for great training. I mean, if you did your resident training at Charity, no matter what you saw the rest of your 50-year career, you got it. You're done, no problem.
Exactly. And I would say too, they call it University Hospital now, but in my mind, it's still Charity Hospital because it's still the same patients. It's still the craziest things. And along the top 10, I didn't send you a picture. I probably should. We had a guy that was on crack cocaine, and I don't know how to this day it happened. He had a bike pedal embedded in his face. And a bike pedal has like those rigid, and it's like this thick. And I was like, how did you walk around? Because somebody cut the pedal and he escaped. And then he showed up at the hospital with his bike pedal on the side of his face. And it's just a really amazing image. But I think it's like, wow, I did that. Or the old kind of cars that had the leaded glass. One of the worst things I've ever seen was somebody, they went through the windshield and it was like slices of bread, but it was like in their, in their forehead, in their eyelids, were picking out like these long, thin shards of glass for hours and hours and hours. And every time, like one of the globes was ruptured beyond repair, and the nerve, we were able to salvage one eye. But it was like every time we thought we'd finished, we'd pull some other little shard. And the crazy thing is, you couldn't see any of that on the imaging. They always talk about glass being able to, I was like, no. There were 1,000 little shards of glass. And so the poor guy, it was just, I think we were in there like 6 or 7 hours picking out the glass, sewing up the lacs, trying to fix the eyeballs. That was like, yeah,
Now,
Charity Hospital.
post Katrina though, things have changed in New Orleans a little bit. So tell us now, where are you teaching residents? Which residents and which facilities are you at?
So I am mostly at the Veterans Hospital, which is also this brand new beautiful facility. The University Hospital, Tulane University and LSU split all the trauma call and each have clinics. They have in that hospital, they have an amazing system for all the different prisons and jails to send their prisoners. They have this underground whole area. And so we treat all the different prisoners from all over the state. And then, so it's different populations. So of course the veterans are one sort of population. And over there, I do teach to LSU and Tulane residents.
Both.
And so it's great. We also have, five different optometry schools that send students. And so we get a lot of visiting students. Imagine that a lot of people want to come down here and, I think some of it is just to, spend a little time in New Orleans. Maybe they don't necessarily want to train here, but there are some ones that come and visit all the time. But so it is a good mix, and it's fun to teach both of the resident and both, the different schools because I feel like very different sort of people. And I feel like a lot of the LSU residents are people that are and that end up in staying in Louisiana that are from the area. And or stay in the region, whereas a lot of the Tulane residents, they go all over the place. And so it's very interesting mix of people and cultures.
Well, it's great that you have both residents from both LSU and Tulane. So obviously they can all benefit from your expertise. But one thing interesting is that your patients have like high clinical complexity, like very difficult clinical cases, but also some social issues too. So high social complexity. You can kind of have the mix of
Yes.
both. I don't think you do a routine 2+ nucleosomosis case ever.
No, and that's a thing. You never know what you're going to get.
Right.
And so that's why I say it's, and I think the veterans sometimes can have all ranges of cataracts, a lot of very dense brunescent. But I was saying, I feel like a lot more of those patients have macular degeneration and get all those intravitreal injections. So I was saying one thing that is challenging, and I wish I could, I couldn't find the picture, but we had a really great picture of what was clearly a needle track where somebody that gave that injection, probably some intern, probably went right through the posterior capsule, but it was just a linear kind of cool. I mean, it was cool, but obviously managing that is very difficult when there's, so you're starting with a hole in the capsule.
Right. So we've had that video on Cataract Coach many times. We've had multiple cases of basically intravitreal injection causing a needle track into the crystalline lens, inducing the cataract, damaging the posterior capsule. Let me ask you now, you've got a patient, and you've seen this so many times, where a junior resident, an intern, or someone else has done an, quote, intravitreal injection, and that bevacizumab, that Avastin, went in the vitreous cavity, but it also happened to slice open the posterior capsule. How do you approach this case?
Right. So, and then, of course, the zonules may not be intact because they probably ripped a few of those out.
Right.
And so, of course, you know, very conservatively, and one of the things I wanted to mention after, you know, all the talks at the New Orleans Academy, I feel like, you know, it's one thing to see the person dilated at the slit lamp. It's a whole nother thing when they're laying down.
Because
gravity pulls. And you ever notice that, you know, like you see, they didn't seem to dilate that great in the clinic. And then suddenly they're laying, you know, supine for the surgery. And all of a sudden you have this super widely dilated eye. I'm like, that's never a good sign to start off with. It's even worse when you can see the thing wiggling back. But I tell the residents, I'm like, ooh, now we're seeing all the zonules. That's probably a good sign that we have some laxity to begin with. I mean, in this case, as we know, that the needle has penetrated behind. But I feel like, you know, some people say make a small rexus. I disagree. I'm in the make a good size rexus.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
The more you can get that lens out of the bag, the better you're going to do in the end. But one of the things that, so we don't always have a CTR, and we absolutely don't have segments. Uh-huh. And if we get those on the shelf, then they expire before we, you know, we just never seem to have them when we need them. But I feel like one of the easiest things to do is if you can get that lens, and I like to have them hydrodissect at, you know, 3 and 9 from where you're sitting.
On the sides.
Yeah, on the sides. So the lens wants to pop up. But I think when you take something out of the bag, you're going to have problems with those zonules, and you don't want the bag to flip in. So the easy thing is to put a dispersive into that bag. Like,
keep it filled. Through the side port.
Yeah, through the side port, and fill the bag. And that kind of pushes the bag out and, you know, keeps the bag from rolling in. Because one of the worst things that happens in these cases is as you take the lens out of the bag kind of curls up. That's kind of the kiss of death, right? Mm-hmm. You don't like to see that little roll up, because chances are you're going to end up taking the whole bag out. And, you know, and we've done that too, I'm sorry to say. But a lot of times you take the viscoelastic as it kind of starts to pop up, you keep the bag formed, you kind of keep the zonules with a little, you know, what little bit of tension there is, but, and then try and get those into the anterior chamber and then do the surgery up there. Now, of course, one of the big things with those cases is if you have a hole in the posterior capsule, you can't really do aggressive hydrodissection.
Right.
Because that can also, you know, open that hole. But I feel like kind of more like hydrodelineation to pop up the lens, take it out, and then you kind of see what you have left with the bag. Now, if I'm Jonathan Hart, I would do a posterior capsulotomy. I can't say I've ever been too slick with doing that. I feel like
it's not easy.
No.
most of the time I try, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. And trying to talk a resident through that, it's like, no, that's not going to happen. But I still, I feel like in those cases, if we can keep the anterior rexus intact, I feel like optic capture with the three piece, Because, you know, and all the talks that I was seeing in New Orleans, I was a little nervous. A lot of people were putting one pieces in these bags.
Not
And I'm
me,
like,
not me.
you know, no, me either. Because then you see, like, you'll come with this Fimos bag with like this thing curled up in a ball. I'm like, no, that's never good. And like, that's if that guy shows up again. Because a lot of times, you do too much or it gets complicated and they're in pain, they kind of disappear for a while. You know, they got to go do a little crack or, do something to
I'm
ease
with
the
you.
pain.
I'm with you. I want the path of least grief here. So I like your pearls. So 100% of our listeners for this podcast do cataract surgery, and 100% of them are going to do cataract surgery on a patient that's had a damaged bag from an intravitreal injection. Because in the US, last year, 4 million cataracts, but more than in the USA, more than 10 million intravitreal injections. And let me tell you, at least a few of those are going to damage the bag. So your pearls are, number one, like I say, no baby Rexes. Make a good
No
size
baby
bag.
Rexus. That makes things so much more difficult.
And then number two, viscoelastic is your friend, right?
Yes. And the other thing is, if you make a baby Rexus, then you probably have to operate in the bag. And then you're pushing and pulling, and you're going to do much more harm to the zonules than if you can get it out of the bag. And again, now these whopping dents, like some of these fluorescent things, a little harder than it seems to get out of the bag. But usually, even those seem to want to come if you make a large enough Rexus.
Wow.
And
Right.
so.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of challenge there with a damaged bag, and you have like the posterior capsule is wide open, yet you have the entire nucleus still in the eye.
Yes.
So there are a
And
lot of challenges.
a lot of challenges. And, and I feel like we used to just do extra caps on those and,
Right.
but I feel like they're manageable. And, I feel like the other thing is, you can, if you can get them up in a little bit, you can chop, because that's the nice thing is there are great instruments out there for, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something sharp. Because I don't give my residents something sharp to begin with. I'm like that takes a little time and trust to have that sharp chopper in
But
their hands.
it's maintaining that basically a viscoelastic
Yes.
barrier
Yes.
between where you're operating and of course the vitreous cavity. So it's having, like as you said earlier, through the side port, inject plenty of viscoelastic to create a barrier.
Yes, and barrier. But again, if you're taking something out of that bag, put something back in the bag.
So
Because
important.
I feel like if you're not used to using the CTRs, the capsular tension rings, that is something that can be a little tricky too. And the first, like the first time, like I've had people use the CTR. A lot of times, I don't have them use it in the injector because I've had it snap the zonules and like the whole bag is like
Right.
goodbye, like oh. But I feel like sometimes it's like kind of feed it in gently with two instruments. But even that, it's sometimes if you have enough zonules, you're like, okay, I feel okay with that. But again, if you've got a hole in the bag, you don't want to just be like dropping that little guy into the bag. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, retina. Not only do you have to take the nucleus out, but you've got to get the foreign body too.
Right, you got a big CT on the vitreous cavity now.
Yeah.
I'm,
So,
that's a big
but
challenge.
this goat is a lot more forgiving because again, even if you leave a lot of it in there, it will go away eventually. And lots of Diamox.
And then I'm with you too. I agree that a three-piece lens with haptics and sulcus and an optic capture is going to be the best long-term stability. Maybe you could sneak in a single piece in the bag and a certain, haptic orientation to have stability, but I don't know. I've seen that bag contract,
Yes.
becomes a hot mess.
And if it doesn't do it right away, the worst is when you get them in a couple years, because like I said, our patients tend to escape and then they come back like, and it was like, whoa, what happened? And it's just when they find most, sometimes it's like they can be kind of the whole bag and everything, you can be dislocated. And again, can that be fixed? You can put sutures up in that and but it becomes a lot more complicated stuff. Whereas I feel like that stiff, haptic of the three piece, a lot of times does a much better job of kind of, but it's smaller. It's, I feel like putting those in the sulcus and the optic in the bag, it seems to stay, and then.
Right.
Because we at Tulane, we did a cool grand rounds on, for Ascaris on haptics being in bad places.
Okay.
And it was, causing like hypotony, and it was anterior chamber or sulcus lenses that were causing ciliary body problems. And, it was kind of fascinating to see, oh yeah, when we take those little haptics that are stuck, that caused some sort of iridodialysis or cyclodialysis, we take those out of there and fix the, that area. Oh my gosh, the pressure came back up. The eye is seeing again. Sometimes having haptics that are kind of not in places we want them to be can be bad.
Right. Sometimes we forget just how delicate the ITs are and how unforgiving the eye is.
Yes.
I mean, we get punished. I mean, just any little thing, like, the eye is so unforgiving.
Yes. And so, well, and on that note, one of the topics that I was saying was that just because it was a case we saw, having those little chain fragments.
Right.
And having
lens fragments.
Yes. And the thing is, so this wasn't even retained fragments in the back of the eye. So what was crazy was we all have these patients, we do cataract surgery, everything goes well, or so we think. And then we taper them off the generic steroid, and then they get a rebound, or they really didn't take it for a month, they whatever, and they come back with a little bit of inflammation.
Right.
And so here's this guy, it's been years and years where on and off and had some steroid response and other issues like that. And lo and behold, that picture, there's a little fragment, and it's no wonder why he had, a recurrent uveitis in that eye, or a little bit of reaction, because there's a nuclear fragment. I'm sad to say I don't really think anybody had gonioed, but that happens all the time. I've done cases and we're finishing, and suddenly it's like some huge piece of nucleus comes out of nowhere. It's like, where did that come from?
Well, literally this week, video number 2850, 2850 on Cataract Coach, which was Tuesday this week, was a case of mine where it was a quiz. I said, here, look at this picture. Tell me why this case not done yet. And the lens is in the bag. It looks totally normal. And at the very end of the case, I go in with a 27-gauge candle and BSS, and I irrigate out the angle 360. And I do it mostly to remove any retained viscoelastic there so that I don't have an IOP spike. But lo and behold, there was a subincisional piece of nucleus that was huge. You can look at the pre-picture. You could not tell.
Exactly. And that's what's crazy. I've had these huge chunks come up from underneath the iris. And it was like, if this big piece, you'd think the iris was elevated because it just came out of nowhere. But I was saying too that one of the things that always weirds me out is that I didn't learn to do phaco with continuous irrigation. I don't like doing surgery like that.
I agree with you 100% on this, by the way.
Yeah. And so, but all these residents, I feel like they're continuous. They're like in, they're out. And I'm like, but I feel like the pressurization differences, because I like sometimes to shallow the chamber a little bit, especially if I have a toric that I know if it's like right on the marks or you have some really long eye, and instead of like operating way down in like the 10 yards down, you can just lower the water, the irrigation a little bit, and then everything kind of comes up. I mean, I guess you could manually lower the bottle or the IOP or whatever, but I just feel like I like being in control of it. And so, but I feel like when the pressure differentials, a lot of times if there are little pieces, they will come forward.
Right.
And so, in this case, I was shocked to see that little piece. I'm embarrassed to say, when I look back, it wasn't just a couple of years. It was 10 years, 10 years. It was 2016.
Wow.
I'm not going to say which resident was because I'm not going to say if he's a man or woman, but he is kind of well known in the circuit.
It doesn't really matter, but that's the amazing part is like, this is more common than we think.
Yes.
If you ever see a patient who has chronic inflammation, like a month after cataract surgery, it's not resolving. And then you happen to look And there's like a little bit of, you see a little bit of iris irregularity, sneaky A at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
A little bit of inferior corneal edema at 6 o'clock. Hello, throw up the gonio prism.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, but, and like I was saying, that we had 5 or 6 instances in 1 year. And the scary thing is, I have had to do transplants like 20 years ago before there was really D-sex. Yeah. You know, I had to do full-on transplant because those little pieces are bopping, you know, when you're sleeping and standing and hitting the endothelium, it's not good. And so, and I was saying there was around the time that this particular surgeon, because it was all about speed. Like, I just want to get, you know, show that I can be really fast and do everything really fast. And, you know, I'm good to go to private practice now. And, but wait, these speed. Poor patients. We ended up desecking a couple of those, but I remember seeing one of those patients at a week out. I just happened to see that post-op and I was like, what is going on here? And, you know, and they're like, oh, we're just watching. And I'm like, you don't just watch a little piece of nucleus in the anterior chamber. I don't care how small it is. That has to come out. No, like we're going to the OR today. Like, nope.
Yeah. You bring up a very good point, which is never, if you're a young surgeon, let's say you've done less than 1,000 cataracts. Never ask yourself, never say, how fast can I be? No. Ask yourself, how clean can I make this case?
Yes.
How perfect can I make this case? And do not even think of the speed ever.
Exactly. And the other thing is that for those people, because I worked in a refractive practice, I was never a 40 cataract surgeon in a couple of hours kind of person. But some of my best friends that are, you know, the person that gives them the most advice is that, you know, surgical tech that's seen a million. It's like, you need to use this second instrument. This is what you need to do. You need to do this kind of, you know, and like, listen to the people who really know, because, you know, they're used to turning over and watching. And, but like you said, doing each step correctly is so much better and more efficient. And then learning where, hey, do I need to take another instrument to push the lens in? No, I can, I'm going in with irrigation anyway. I mean, there's ways you can cut down on time. And, but, you know, my favorite is, you know, a lot of times we get some of these residents that come in and they're good and they know it. And so then they don't want to hear what you're saying.
Because that's unfortunate. Again, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. But, you know, it happens. And so I've had any number of those residents and that have gone on to be great people and, you know, successful and whatnot. But I just remember for a while we mandated that everyone had to put a stitch in the, you know, in the
I love it. For a junior resident, I love it. You got to do it.
But, you know, it's funny when they take, you know, 5 minutes for a cataract, but 20 minutes to put that one stitch in.
Well, you know what's funny? I had a suggestion for my residents, which only about 20% actually ever did, which was, I said, we got the cataract coach 10, 10, 10, meaning in the wet lab with a tomato, with a grape, with a pig eye, can you do 10 sutures of 10 on nylon in 10 minutes? And by golly, out of the 8 residents a year, maybe 1 or 2 could do it.
Exactly. And they didn't really spend any, they didn't want to spend time in the wet lab.
You're right.
And, you know, the other thing was we kind of stopped doing the suturing because that was so much worse for the patients. And I'm like, you're only, it's supposed to be a superficial stitch because this is a triplanar wound. Right. But I got referred from a different VA, an endophthalmitis case. Yeah. And this is what happened. They put the suture through and inside the anterior chamber and out, but they made a knot and then couldn't bury it. And so they just left the knot on the top. Well, the problem was, that the senior resident didn't see the post-op, the, you know, PGY2 did. And so when they cut that suture, they pulled the knot through that had been sitting outside the cornea. Oh. And so this guy got endophthalmitis because inoculated the anterior chamber. But it was just like, and then it would be like, sometimes they were bunching up the incision. So they were having these leaks. I'm like, they get these referrals because I'm a cornea specialist. I'm like, what, you know, the leak is because the stitch is so bad. I'm like, no, I can't do that. I can't sit through that. It adds so much extra time and stress to my day. I'm like, no, I'm like, well, wow. I'll sit with you in the wet lab and judge your sutures. But it's just like, I'm like, no, we're going to just do clear corneal, and you're going to have to learn to hydrate and close the wounds, because we had so many fewer leaks that way than with the sutures.
No, it's a delicate balance. And then, you know, I agree with you that I do not like to ever use continuous irrigation of the phaco machine. I want to have surgeon control with my foot pedal, so I can choose between zero and one whenever.
Yes, exactly. But when you
go in, you program the machine to have only position one, you're giving up a lot of control.
Thank you. You are my hero, because I feel the same way. I'm trying to tell the residents to do, and they look at me like I'm like I've come from the Stone Age. Yes, I've got my club in this hand.
But you know what? The other thing too is, listen, I'm old fashioned. I like to be in control.
Yes. I think
surgeons should always be in control. I also drive a car that's stick shift. Oh, I have three pedals. I have three pedals. I've got a clutch pedal, and I change my own gears. Like, you know what? The new generation, I think very, very few people under the age of 40 know how to even drive stick shifts.
Oh, and believe me, and a lot of these youngsters, they're not going to be driving soon anyway. They're going to have some electric car that drives them to and from work. They'll be like, I forget what movie it was where they're sent them off into space, and then they all are like laying on things watching, you know, so they can't really even walk anymore. But I feel like these residents, you know, will they even be operating? You know, will robotics be for them? It's crazy.
As you know, I got a horse in the robot race. I'm a big fan of that. So that's my disclosure, but.
But still, it's amazing.
Now let's give some practical pros, because our podcast attracts a lot of young ophthalmologists.
Okay.
I'd say more than half our listeners are 30s and 40s. So they're young surgeons who could definitely benefit from this. So if you see a patient, number two questions I got to ask is, number one, on the table, how can you lessen your risk of a retained lens fragment? And number two, on post-op, visit one, visit month one, week one, whatever, what things would raise your suspicion of, hey, I may have a retained lens fragment, I may have to go back to the OR?
Those are such good questions. And so any of the residents that operate with me, I always say, I want to be that voice in your head that's like, don't do this or don't do that. But I am a real stickler, because think about this, we're using a special ultrasound, we're fragmenting these into little tiny fine pieces.
Right.
And think about how many times we're trying to get those pieces, and then we're getting that first section that you've chopped it or quad, you know, done divide and conquer, you're getting that first, you know, quad out of there, but there are little pieces that have come out of that, and they're in the para, my whole thing is, no, don't go on to the next quad or the next chop. Get those tiny little pieces, because it's easy to forget about those. And they do. Then they go up under the cornea in the angle, and you've totally forgotten about it. But plus, right, you know, as you know, baby steps, you know, you go to a surgery center, if you used a tube of Viscote and a tube of Helon, they'd be like, goodbye, we'll never talk to you again. You're way too expensive and high maintenance. But you know, we use all that Viscote, so it gets stuck in the Viscote. And so I'm always like, if you see that piece, take it now. Don't come back to it later.
That's great, actually. Great advice.
And then, so all those little fragments. But again, it's being really careful in the end, because I feel like sometimes that's the speed. They want to get the speed, so they don't take the time to really make sure that they're getting out a lot of the Viscote. And I'm like, see those tiny little bubbles at the top? If you're in fluid, in liquid, those bubbles should be dancing. That's but right. If they're stuck in one spot, there's a big pocket of Viscote. So I'm like, but lo and behold, sometimes when they really suck out the Viscote, it's like, oh, that little thing popped out of there, that nugget. I mean, and you know, I'm like, I'm so glad we saw that nugget right now. But, you know, and then the other thing is just, I feel like sometimes where, you know, like even in the bag, some people, I insist that my residents go for subincisional cortex first.
I like that.
It is way more complicated and difficult, but I'm like, don't go sucking out that easy, fluffy stuff, because that's holding the bag open for you. But sometimes if they left that and then they can't get this piece out, you never know what's kind of hiding down in there with that fluffy stuff. And that And then once the patient, they're laying flat, but once they're up and, you know, stuff moves around with gravity and all of that. So I just say, you know, if you see stuff, get it if you can. Don't just leave it, because I feel like that's when you get into troubles. But so then the second part of your question was, what do you do if you kind of have this person smoldering?
Right.
And, you know, and again,
post-op.
Yeah, post-op. And so I think it's important to make sure, number one, because in our population, did they actually get the medication and have they been taking something?
Oh, that's important. Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of ours are people, say they did, but they didn't. They couldn't afford that, you know, even if it's $5 or $10 or whatever it is, copay. And they got, maybe they got the antibiotic, or we gave them the antibiotic. And so it's making sure that they actually did take the medicine. But I would say you put them back on the drops. And if I feel like if they have more than one bout of recurrent, you know, kind of rebound iritis and pain, sensitivity, all of that, then I think you really need to put begonia on,
right.
Make sure. And I think sometimes something that is helpful, again, because we're looking at them sitting up, sometimes it's good to actually lay them back in that chair, give them a few minutes, you know, kind of move them around a little bit, and then sit them back up and see if something kind of pops out of nowhere with the change in positioning.
You may be surprised.
You might be surprised. And then, you know, lo and behold, like this little chip that, this resident, this very diligent resident found, and they were taking him back on Monday to take that little piece out. So I was very proud of them for that.
Right. Yeah. And when in doubt, just take him back and move that piece.
Yes.
Don't just think that piece of nucleus is going to resolve with, quote, time. It does not resolve.
Exactly. And thank you, because no, it's not. And this is 10 years later. When I looked after I talked to you, I was like, oh my gosh, 10 years, 2016, 2026. 10 years. So, but he was, and this person was very lucky that their cornea isn't all beat up, because again, those have sharp edges there and it bounces up and down. And you know that, like I said, I have seen endothelium that is damaged where we had to do a DSEC or like I said, in the olden days, because, you know, of course you and I walked barefoot,
right?
You know, uphill through the snow, right?
Both directions of school.
Both directions.
No, obviously, yeah, things have obviously changed a whole lot. But yeah, those are all such great pearls. And I think, yeah, during surgery, they hide either in the angle, especially in the subincisional angle. They get trapped in dysplastic, as you said. And the other danger I see is patients who are like kind of dilated. They dilate to like 5.5 millimeters, enough for you to do the case. But then maybe not enough for you to actually lift up the iris and look underneath to make sure there's nothing left in the bag or under the iris.
Yes. And you did raise such a good point that it is like they may have started out dilated, but then they come down. And then, so like you said, take the INA and lift up, make sure, but just sometimes changing the pressure differential in that. Because again, you want to be careful with those cases, because too much fluid under the iris can cause pupillary block.
Right.
And as I've learned from the heart triad, if you are having stuff that's coming out the wounds, the iris that is being floppy, it's actually better to lower the pressure than to try to keep putting viscoelastic and raising. Because you ever notice, it's like, it was just coming out the main wound. Now it's coming out the
parallel.
That's never a good sign.
Right. And that also goes back to your point of like, don't use continuous irrigation. Learn to actually use your own foot.
Exactly.
You can determine when you want the irrigation on or off. I'm with you 100%. And when I taught residents, and I did it for 22 years.
22 years. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
From the year 2000 to 2022, I taught 8 residents a year at UCLA. And so I was like you, like, no, there's no continuous irrigation here. And I also was like, quit being such a, you know, special person. No, you cannot turn off the room light. The room
light's
on.
That's not the word you wanted to say.
Could be such a fancy pants. Okay, I mean, the room lights stay on. No, you do not need the room dark to do orexis.
Thank you. I mean, and the funny thing is, I'm a cornea person, so I'm used to no view anyway. because and like with lights on, lights off, like whatever. No, it doesn't matter. And so I'm glad I again you're my hero because I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And then also with the speed, please, if you're doing my phaco on my eye, please spend an extra minute or two and make it so beautiful and so perfect. I don't care that you save 2 minutes, please.
I love that in the picture. It makes you look like you have a little crown on top of your head when you say that. I love it.
It's true. It's just like, oh.
Like a little angel halo.
Yeah, if it's my eye, please, please spend an extra 2 minutes and just make the case for just perfect.
Exactly. Because again, you know, and it's especially if it's someone that you care about or like think about it. If this was your mother or father or grandmother or father, you know, like what would you do for them? Of course, you'd take an extra 1 minute, you know, and really, you know, take that little extra TLC. So I'm with you entirely. Like treat everyone like you would your own family.
That's the golden rule for sure. Now, I got a question for you. So this is probably the most important question that's asked to me on Cataract Coach by young ophthalmologists is, they say, Doc, I'm struggling with surgery. I'm not performing as well as I want in the operating room. And they say, should I give up surgery and do non-surgical ophthalmology? You've taught residents for decades. What is your advice to young residents? Listen, I'm just struggling the OR. I just can't. My hands aren't just doing what I want them to do. What should I do here? What's your advice?
And you know, and I have gotten any number of those. I'm like, spend a day with me in the OR. We'll fix that.
Tell me, how do you fix it?
You know, and it just, they're all different. But I think, first of all, and especially now more than ever, like, I'm sorry, we didn't have attendings that sat with us. So we made mistakes. I'm just going to put it that way. And we moved on. It didn't get to me. But I feel like these young docs, they are used to a lot of positive reinforcement, participation trophies and all of that.
I didn't get that.
Why I say it matters is because they cannot, and realize a lot of these young docs, they're some of the tops of their classes, the best of the best of the best. They are not used to failure. They are not used to not doing something properly. But this isn't something that you're born, you know, knowing how to do.
Right.
I mean, and so I feel like when they are not doing well, that's when they really get down. And so I feel like they do better when they have positive results. And so one of the things that we did some years back is we got the femto laser. I'm not going to talk about brand.
Whatever. Yeah.
But I feel like in some ways, because the different programs are different, and some of the residents don't get any, you know, experience if certain of the attendings are on vacation or it's over the holidays. And sometimes it can be, for me, like July 1st, almost every new rotation. And so the catalyst is like putting the training wheels on, or I'm sorry, the femto laser. And I have no financial interest in any of that, but it cuts the rexus. It actually does the fragmentation. So we start with the basics, like, because again, I feel like there are certain things, if you sit in the room with me, I'm like, don't push down, you're pushing down.
Yeah.
Like I played piano, it's like, you know, the wrists up, like my piano teacher said, it's like the back of the instrument has to be up. But I feel like the stressful things get kind of taken off, the training wheels are kind of put on, they don't have to phaco as deep, they don't have to sculpt as deep. And I feel like that has really helped. But the other thing is, I feel like if someone comes to me like that, then I let them start and I take over a lot earlier to make the rexus go nicely. Especially if you don't have a femto laser, I do some of the things, and I know they aren't happy, but I let them do the things so that we have a successful case. Because I feel like with these young doctors, success breeds success.
Yes.
You know, positive reinforcement. Like they do well. My kids always did better with a gold star than a tongue lashing or a, any kind of negative something. Like, you know, I could punish, you know, or if I wanted to take away, that only made things worse. But if I were like, oh, but I'll give you a gold star, or I'll take you shopping or buy you that video game. And so, but I feel like doing well, it really does matter to these younger docs. And so they can't kind of brush away when they're not, you know, and literally, like I was in a case with a young doc. And again, that, you know, the child of an ophthalmologist who was very well known, and they broke capsule and I took over. And the person was like, and I'm just like, okay, you know, we just take a breath. It's okay. Right. Stuff happened. This patient is going to do fine. And, you know, but, and the patient was, and it ended up 20/20, and we did everything, but I did take over to kind of get us there. But I just, like I said, I never thought I would be that person, but I kind of have become that because I feel like, you know, I'm not doing it to be mean or to, but on the other hand, we also, there's a person underneath there right. that we want to do well.
Right.
But again, I feel like, and then I let the person, okay, I'm like, okay, now take that last quad out, or, you know, this is what we're going to do. And you're going to, you know, I'm going to start the vitrectomy and you're going to finish, and we're going to, you know, and then I'm going to put the lens in the eye, but you're going to position it. You know, so we're tag teaming it. But so then the patient ends up kind of getting the good result. And then, you know, and then they see that, like, okay, you don't have to be perfect. You don't, you know, everything doesn't have to go exactly the way you wanted it for us to still have a good outcome.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, and this is, you know, and I'm like, this, nobody said this was easy, you know, but I think that's the thing. When you start your training, and I had done general surgery, I had never, that's not true. Ophthalmology was my last rotation of med school. And I saw video, like what they were doing on the screen. I had no concept of what they were doing. And then I did a postdoctoral research fellowship year. And I watched the chairman and other people do surgery. It was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this looks so easy. And I'm sorry, how many times have you had reps that give you attitude that they think they know more than you, or that they're better than you? And it's like,
right.
Like one of my favorite stories was my chairman, God rest his soul, has passed away. But, you know, a guy that he had kind of come through the ranks with that was now high up in one of the companies, and they were on a mission trip. And the guy was like, oh, let me step in and do. And it was like, he couldn't even put the instruments into the eye, much less start a phaco. But I just think you watch, and you have no concept of what is being done in front of you. And then suddenly you're like, oh my God, my hand, it's like a baby, like my hands are heavy, like I'm pushing down, like, you know, like, but I think it's, and then with time, because that's what I say, I'm like, you know, good job. But I'm like, when we, you know, like 6 months into it, I'm like, okay, so we're going to talk about a few other concepts now. Like, we're going to show you how to move the eye to see now that you can kind of control what you're doing and not push the eye into the nose and things like that. But I'm like, baby steps. It's like, it takes time. It, you know, it's not easy, but you were watching all this surgery with all these amazing people and you had no concept of what they were doing. Right. And I would tell you sometimes, have you ever had residents that say, why did you do that? And I'm doing whatever, because it's become so like, you do what you do. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You're going to have to tell me what it was I was doing that you're talking about. Cause they're like, oh, why did you put this way? And I'm like, oh, I did that because it's easier to spin, or it's easier to crack, or it's easier at this, you know, angle for me, you know, or whatever. And it's just, you know, and I, again, doing cornea half the time, like I'm doing these complicated cases through herpetic keratitis and whatever. And like, I'm doing recs and they're like, I can't even see what you're doing.
Right.
I know. But the part of it is that you've done so many and you do everything the same way, that's where you get speed. That's where you get consistency. That's where you get, but it's just, you know, but knowing the dynamics and doing it properly each time. And so that's, you know, just pledging consistently. You know, I had a guy that said he was going to go into oculoplastics because he just was having such difficult time. And it turns out that he was being staffed by an older surgeon. And when I say older, okay, I remember when I was a young resident and I started, I was like, oh, the attendings, those are the old guys. Right. I'm the old guy now.
Right. Yeah, we both are.
That's a little scary. But this was a really old guy who trained on intracaps, not even extra caps. And so he didn't believe in hydrodissection. And so that was part of the problem was that, and I'm like, oh baby, you know, this is part of the problem. I'm like, darling, we're going to fix that. But you just, I'm like, hydrodissection, hydrodelineation, you know, like mobile, get that nucleus moving and we're good to go. And it took, like I said, it took one day in the OR and he was just like, okay, I can do this. And he does do cataract surgery.
Wow.
And so he did go into oculoplastics because that really was his true love, but he still does some of that. So I was happy. And so, I mean, you tell me, like, you know, it's just, I feel like, you know, but it's a mentality, you know, you just have to embrace it. You know, you're not, you know, again, these young docs, they've had so many accolades. It's difficult to not be successful at something that you want so badly, that looks so easy.
Well, yeah. So in terms of that, anytime people say, oh, it's so easy, looks so easy. Yeah. I tell them, especially if they're not an ophthalmologist, I say, get your palm, put 8 drops of water in your palm. I do my entire surgery inside those 8 drops.
Oh, wow. I love that.
I said, always think of that.
I love that.
So do you think it's not that simple to do?
I think
you and I are the generation where there's kind of the analogy of, like, you know, with the horse, whether it's the carrot or the stick, we're the generation, because we finished residency 2000, the same year, we were trained with, like, the stick.
Yes. Yes, and we
were. The new generation is trained with the opposite. Instead of negative reinforcement, it's positive. It's about the carrot, the reward.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And so I'm not saying my way is better one or the other. In fact, I wish I didn't have to suffer from the stick. Because
we suffered from the stick. We suffered from the stick.
But it taught us a humility that we, like, you know what, came with a little bit of respect that, you know, this is something very revered. This is not something simple. Yeah. And we owe it to the patients. And then the other thing was, I would tell the resident when we're going to surgery today, hey, we're doing surgery today. My number one responsibility is to the patient. I'm here to make sure this patient has a great outcome of surgery. And my second role here is to teach you. But I can't teach you at the expense of the patient's outcome.
That is so true. That is so true. And the other thing that I was saying is, so along those lines of teaching, is that really small things, and in the 8 drops, super small things make such a big difference.
Young
doc that couldn't put the suture in, he was like, all right, I give up. And I was like, I'm so glad that you asked, because it's not just your suturing. There are about 10 other things that I've been dying to say to you. Because when you go in with your incision and you come out and you swipe and it's a little bit larger and you know, you're letting too much fluid out, but when you're going in and you're constantly pushing down as your second instrument, you're flattening the chamber, because the machine that we're using, what I don't like, it's IOPs and the bag is inside the machine, but it scares me because, you know, it's like I've never had the bag come up so much. And if they're pushing down a little or their wound is a little bit too big, it's like that last piece. I'm like, don't breathe. Don't stop. I'm like, don't fake-o. I'm like, no. I'm like, just stuff it in there with the second instrument. Like, you don't need to fake-o to get it. Just like INA, you can get it in there. I'm like, no, the bag.
You know, there's one thing I'd love to discuss with you that I can discuss with very, very few other ophthalmologists. And that is, you know, after doing 8 residents a year for 22 years, so let's say almost 200 residents, only a small percent actually appreciate you.
Oh my gosh.
That's the hardest part.
That is so true. One, like, I taught from after my, after I did my cornea fellowship until like 2004. And then I went back to it in 2008 after being in private practice for 4 years. And when I came back, you know, and again, all these residents would be like, thank God for you. You know, you teach us so much. But then every year, after year, after year, after year, we'd go to the end of the year or the graduation, and it would be heartbreaking. Like, they give the awards to like every other faculty member, and I'm like, nothing. And I'm like, right. I thought I meant something to you. I thought that, you know, I taught you how to operate, like me. Right. Like, those other people didn't sit in the OR with you for hours and hours and hours and, you know, talk you through all that. And, you know, and then eventually I have gotten, I think, twice in from all that time, the, you know, surgery, you know, teacher of the year. And so it does mean something, but you're right. Like, when, like, one of like my favorite residents, and it was just like, they didn't even say anything at graduation. They said something about every other person except for me. And it was so bad that one of the older guys, he was so upset. He went to talk to the chairman. He's like, nobody said one word about Dr. Metzinger. And maybe I'd been there like 5 or 6 years. And so I was just like, you know, like you said, humility. It's just, I'm put here for a reason. I right. do think that this is part of my, you know, purpose here on earth, is to help teach. And like you said, it's an amazing thing to give people back their vision. And one of the things, you know, sometimes in private practice, people aren't nice.
Right.
Someone gave me a cup that said, don't confuse your Google search with my education. And there are just these people that come in telling you what they're going to, you know, and I'm like, yeah, no. I had a lady tell me she was going to get cataract surgery. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're 2020. I'm not doing right. it. Well, when she came back in a year, and somebody did that surgery, and she was super unhappy. And right. she's like, well, they're saying I have to have LASIK. I want you to do it. I want you to fix me. And I said, no. Yeah. You didn't respect me enough a year ago to listen to me. I said, you're just as unhappy as I thought you'd be. But I'm like, I'll make some recommendations for your LASIK surgeon, but that won't be me. You're going to have to go back to the people that did this to you. And
right.
But you're right. It is a very thankless job sometimes.
Yeah, it can be. It's like, if the residents knew, listen, just tell your faculty who teach you, just say, thank you. I'm so appreciative of what you've done. Nothing more than a sweet thank you is all yeah. that's needed. But you know what? We do it. It's a labor of love for us. We're not doing it for the thanks.
Exactly.
We're doing it because it's a calling for us.
Well, and obviously you have this amazing, and I'm so impressed with how many people you touch, but that can relate to you, that what you do, it's like, okay, that is like me when I'm in there. I love the little comments like, I've just witnessed a crime. And like when you and it is like the feelings and the emotions and everything. It's just like, okay, that is what we go through.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. So, you know, I think you and I are both basically halfway through our careers. I just think the second half is going to be even better than the first half.
I think so too. And I think, you know, again, you appreciate the people that taught you so much more. It's kind of like, I look at it like when I was a kid and I became a teenager and I was like, oh my God, my parents, they don't know anything.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get to like your 20s and you're just like, oh my God, everything my parents said was true. I get it now. But I feel sometimes like that about with the residents, like they have right. no idea. And then they go out and it's, and because like I said, I want to be that voice in your head that says, don't do that. Don't skimp there. Don't cut corners. Don't, you know, do it right. Do it, you know, and I do think there are a lot that eventually kind of come back, because it's amazing to me sometimes, like there'll be people I hadn't seen in a while. And then I'm at the meeting and I'm, you know, looking at something and they'll be like, Dr. Metzinger, and I'm just so happy to see you. And oh, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And so it does. So there are some people that kind of like me when I was a kid, that kind of wise up and are like, okay, the people, you know, that I love that were like parents to me, they did know what they were talking about. And, you know, and so there is some gratification in seeing some of those people and how thankful and
right.
you know, that they do remember you. And sometimes it's not so good. Like I feel sometimes it's like I my kids say I have a mean voice. I'm like, don't make me use the mean voice. I'm like, you don't want the mean voice.
No, you listen. You're protective over your patients. What it is?
Yes.
Because like we talked about earlier, as a professor, as an attending, your first responsibility is for that patient and that patient's well-being.
And you also are the ones, you know, that's what I say, especially at the veterans hospital, you might be here for a minute, but I'm the one that has this patient for a lifetime.
Right.
And so, you know, it matters.
Yes.
And, you know, and one of the things is that, you know, and I had heard people say this in surgery, but, you know, and I've seen people that, you know, I'm sorry, there are none of us are perfect.
Right.
And I'm sorry, if someone tells you they don't have complications, let me tell you something. They're either operating on the cake, you know, like the easiest things known to man. They're not taking on the difficult stuff, or they just aren't doing much operating.
Right.
And so,
or they're not quite fully truthful.
Mm. Yes. Or there's that too. But I feel like the best thing is when you have difficulties and, you know, hopefully you've talked to the patient in advance that, you know, as much as, you know, this could, you know, really help you, there are issues that could arise too. But that you're truthful and saying, look, that case did not go anything like, and I've had patients that the first eye, and then I'm like, who was that person that was in the OR? Because they were not the same person that I operated on 2 weeks ago, because whatever anesthesia difference or, you know, they were going kind of crazy. But it's just, things did not go like we planned. I could not get the whole cataract out.
Right.
You will have to have that other surgery. And I have it, you know, and, but I just keeping them in the loop. Because I feel like sometimes, you know, the patients know, you know, they're in there and that little bit of anesthesia they got through the IV is not meant to hold them in there for 45 minutes or an hour or an hour and a half.
Of course.
And so I, you know, they know, and people are like, my buddy had surgery and, you know, it was 5 minutes. Like what? You were in there for 2 hours. And it's like, yes, sir. It was, you know, this was much more challenging. The cataract was much bigger, you know, but being truthful. And kind of, but telling them every, you know, not trying to like, you know, wait or hide it, or because I feel like then the patients get really upset. They know something's wrong, you know, and, but then, and I feel like the ones that you're, you know, kind of have those discussions, they're like, oh man, you know, I'm always that person. Of course, if something could go wrong, it would be me. But, you know, again, and then I know some really good retina guys, so that helps too. But get them in to see retina immediately. Get the surgery as quickly as you can, you know. And patients, you know, like I said, they can do well even if the worst thing happens. You drop them out. I got referred this patient, and it was just he'd had pigmentary dispersion, and it was like opened the capsule, started hydrodissection, and then the whole nucleus in the bag just dropped into the back. And a, you know, very well-known cataract surgeon said, okay, well, now you have to go 10,000 more cases without having that happen. Right. I was like, thanks for that note of reassurance. And I'm like, and I will say to the residents sometimes, you know what, there isn't a whole lot that you can do that I haven't done or haven't seen. And right. Then of course we'll be in the middle of that case. And I'm like, oh, you're right. I have never seen that before. Like, just give me a minute.
Well, like, I think your patients are so fortunate to have you the attending, and your residents too are so fortunate to have you teaching them. What you bring is like not only incredible level of surgical skill and dedication, but like, you're just so easy to talk to and learn from. So
thank you so much. Oh,
they're super lucky. I mean, I think if you're an LSU or Tulane resident, could you just send an email right now and say, dear Dr. Metzinger, thank you so much. You've done so much. Because, Rebecca, you lose money every week on purpose to teach them.
And believe me, one of the things you don't know about me is I started a biotech startup company at some point that had $10 million invested in it. Now, wow. COVID happened, and so I could be on the other side.
Right.
But you're right. It life isn't about money. You can't take that stuff with you. But all the stuff, you know, like I said, it's like give a, you know, person a fish and you feed them once, but teach them how to fish and you feed them for a lifetime. And I feel like that's the thing. Like we're giving that, you know, thing that they can do for a lifetime.
Oh, I love it. If you're in your 30s or 40s, you listen to this podcast right now, whoever your mentor was who taught you surgery and residency, send them an email right now. Say, thank you for teaching me how to fish, because now I catch my own fish every week, and it's changing my life for the better, and I've helped thousands of patients because of you. Just do that. Oh, my, I live for things like that.
Yes, and it just is. And don't, you know, and the thing is, I just lost one of my, you know, favorite mentors. Dr. Caldwell passed away. It's been 2 years, but Dr. Friedlander a couple of years before that. So be sure to tell them while they're still here to appreciate it.
I know. What's such great advice. Can you imagine, Rebecca, we've been talking for more than an hour.
It's like, it seems like five minutes.
you and I could just hang out for like hours. This is amazing. You're an incredible asset to that program, and they should be so thankful to have you.
Well, thank you so much. Well, you are the amazing person. I love everything that you've done with all this, but it just is. It's so fun to watch and be part of it.
Right. You know,
and
we all learn together.
I love it.
Yeah.
And it's just, but you're such a natural at it. And, you know, like I said, but I love that they just kind of throw it at you and you're like, you know, what would you do? What would you do? What would you do? And I love the way, like, a couple of people, like the moderator, you're like, okay, Sumich, what would you do?
I just like to have some fun. So.
Yeah, and it was super fun. Yeah. And that's, again, going into that, you know what? I got the stick too, but the carrot is so much more fun. Like the
and you're not,
enjoying.
You and I, our generation, we are changing that now. So I don't train. I don't teach with a stick like I was taught.
Absolutely not.
I teach with the carrot.
Exactly.
And I think we're doing okay.
I think we are. And, you know, again, there are some really superb surgeons. And I've seen the list of the ones that you've helped train. There are some pretty amazing ones.
Yeah, all good people. We all learn together. Again, I want to thank you so much for this podcast, taking an hour out of your time, sharing your wealth of knowledge with so many people. We'll probably get about 10,000 audio streams and about 1,000 video views.
Wow.
All by ophthalmologists. Yes, it's crazy.
Well, I hope you invite me back because I've had so much fun. And it is. I feel like I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. And
this is amazing. Again, thank you so much. And again, you were fantastic.
So are you. You're one of my favorite people. I love your podcast and all your Cataract Coach website, everything. It's so helpful. Project.
I want to remind our listeners, viewers, remember, we got a new podcast every Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, anywhere you find a podcast, you definitely find the Cataract Coach podcast. And of course, we have a new Cataract Coach video every single day. We're at almost 2,900 videos, one a day, every day in a row, never miss a day ever. And we'll keep going on. Remember, wow. We have a sister channel. We got retinarounds.com, our sister channel, where we have retina videos all the time and also a retina podcast. So check it out. And until next time, I'll check you later.